Andre, so nice to have you back on this podcast.
Oh, always my pleasure.
And let's get started with Scott Ritter's article on the consortium news, in which he's trying to talk about this new strategy, nuclear strategy of administration in Washington, the Biden administration. And the title of the article shows what the article is about, on a highway to hell in terms of this race of nuclear bombs. What's your take on this article?
Well, I didn't have the chance to read it. I will, obviously. Most of the time I read pretty much everything Scott writes. But, I mean, you know, you have to understand the preemptive strike or the first strike, it was always the, you know, American approach to this. And the question is what many people miss completely. And I am on record. You can quote me on this. I can defend my point of view. United States lost the arms race, especially in nuclear weapons, because in terms of the yields or whatever, the fuses or whatever the hell, you know, you will explode. Doesn't matter if you explode, you know, 150 kilotons or 250 kilotons, depending on the type of the target, albeit there are some certain, you know, facilities which can withstand a lot, not direct hit, but a lot. But the problem is the accuracy of the modern nuclear weapons is such that you do have the chance to operate under what is called counter force manner, which essentially you attack primarily military targets and the industrial facilities, because your circular arrow allows you to attack it, because it's shrunk today to the tens of meters, actually, not even hundreds of meters. But the problem is, and I stress, United States lost the nuclear arms race. Many people do not understand when they talk about those, you know, how they redesigned the nuclear weapon or whatever it has become. It was always about delivery systems, period. It was always, you know, nobody cared if the Soviet Union, for example, would move the some, you know, free-falling bomb to Cuba during Cuban Missile Crisis, or some device, you know. The issue was, of course, because it was what about the delivery systems, missiles, which could reach the eastern seaboard. That's where when the whole hell broke loose. United States does not have capability to overcome this gap in the delivery system. And you can quote me, I wrote books about it, and I have the background in this delivery systems, okay? So, and when they say that they can, what, counter Russia with what? Trident 2D5? The only thing which is left for them, for the United States and those people in Pentagon, is to stick nuclear warheads on the good old Tomahawks. And the idea that at some point of time, they will be able to finally field some kind of the semi-workable version of the long-range hypersonic weapon, period. There is nothing else there. The Sentinel program, which, hey, again, I'm speaking now, consider me as an American speaking from this point of view. Minuteman is a 50 years old technology. Yeah, they updated, you know, they maintained, they recently, you know, launched it to check, which is normal situation, to check the technical viability of the technology that, you know, in case of, God forbid, you know, war, they can launch it. But Sentinel program is already over budget and several years, you know, lagging behind the deadlines. Probably is going to end up being removed from the even IOC, initial operation capability, probably by a decade. What do you have? You have Trident D2 and Minutemen. Who knows how much longer they could be maintained? And so when you begin to look at this, it's just like, yeah. And look at a Russian arsenal of delivery systems. I mean, avant-garde alone, you know, what are you going to do about it? So, and the only thing which is left in this case is primarily to stick nuclear warhead to some remaining what is called standoff weapons, which of course Tomahawk, maybe JASSM. I'm not sure that you can stick a nuclear warhead to JASSM, but again, don't quote me on this particular matter, because who knows, they might get their, you know, small enough warhead on JASSM. But that's about it. There is nothing more to it. There's nothing else there. And, well, of course, they think that, you know, a strategic air force somehow can solve this issue. No, it cannot solve it. So, and you have this situation, desperation, and that is why they need to change it, because they need to present some kind of their, you know, public image that they do something about what became, as I already stated, in terms of delivery system, United States is not even in the same league with Russia. It has no access to hypersonic technologies of strategic nature, such as Avangard, for example. And I can sit here and, you know, count those hypersonic weapons and Sarmat, RS-28. There is nothing out there which can even compare to it. It's essentially unlimited range strategic missile, strategic missile, which can fly around the world and attack, and it can launch avant-garde. It can carry, I don't remember, don't quote me on this, but I believe it can carry something between 12 and 20 avant-garde. Try to intercept those avant-garde. You can't. And that's what is happening. And there is a reaction, and hence, especially against the backdrop of the catastrophe, essentially, and lost war in Ukraine, and with it, you know, the consequences and strategic ramifications across the whole game, you know, which is, of course, global, they need to do something. Okay, let's change strategy. Let's stick, you know, those things. And intermediate missiles, obviously. Pershings, you remember? Yeah, so INF treaty, which, by the way, Trump administration successfully abrogated. So there you go. What, they have nothing left.
Yeah. It was New York Times that reported on this new strategy. Do you think that they're trying to intimidate Russia and China? Or because what's the necessity of doing this?
Yeah, only that. It's not a strategy. People who call it strategy, it's all baloney. They try to change posture. That's it. It's not a strategy. It's just posture. So, and again, the only way for them to intimidate is to stick in intermediate range missiles, like they were trying to develop this LRHW, which is, of course, doesn't work. And they're going to get some kind of intermediate range missiles there, and that's the only thing they know. That's why Russia is responding. You stick those things there, you know what, doesn't matter. Perimeter, you're going to get it, and you're going to, you know, have the Washington and the other places, you know, turned into the parking lot. Simple as that. Russians also can adjust, but Russians have much more capable delivery systems. And then there is another thing, which they, I stress it nonstop. It's purely technological issue, and it has to be remembered. The only thing United States has anti-ballistic, which is not even useful against hypersonic maneuvering vehicles, is the GBI, you know, ground-based interceptor. It is some type of missiles, you know, which is kinetic kill. They launch this vehicle, intercept it on some kind of their, you know, apogee or mid-course intercept somewhere at 2,000, 3,000 kilometers above the Earth. The problem is, what are you going to do with the things which fly 20 kilometers and maneuver? You have nothing left. And Russia is already rearmed on those hypersonic systems. And then suddenly, that's GBI. Now compare this GBI to which is now serial production S-500, which is, of course, you know, full capability, anti-intercontinental ballistic missile capability, not to speak about the fact that it actually can intercept hypersonic vehicles, which United States doesn't have. And so when you look at this, then we have S-550, which is the obviously the mobile version of the A-235 Noodle system. So, there's no comparison. It's like comparing Ferrari to the Volkswagen Beetle. you know, and this gap continues to grow. They don't have capability now to catch up. This is what I wrote the books, you know, starting from the first one. They do not, well, some people obviously understood the implications. And remember first reaction when on the March 3, 2018, when Vladimir Putin and his address to the Federation Council, Federal Assembly of Russia, he unveiled those weapons. There was, oh yeah, those boutiques, those are cartoons. Guess what? And I mean, their arms race was lost there. And by the time maybe they will get to some kind of real hypersonic capabilities, it is already too late, because Russia leads not by years. Russia leads by generation of weapons, including defensive one. And this is the thing which they never understood until they saw how air defense performs in their special military operation. Russians have the directly designed systems such as S-300 V4, for example, apart from S-400, which is capable now intercept hypersonic targets, and let alone other things of S-500 nature. What's coming next? Late Vladimir Zhirinovsky, before he died, I mean, like 3-4 years ago, while being on one of the shows, he mentioned it, and everybody went, you know, panicky in the Western media, said, well, S-700 is coming. You know, he might have been joking, but the point is, you think Russians do not work on something like S-600 or S-700? Oh, shit. You can bet your behind, you know, that they do, you know, and whatever comes, the capability comes next generation, it will be two generations ahead of what United States has now. So, and that's what it is. This is what the whole backdrop behind it.
Yeah. And getting to the conflict in Ukraine, we had an interview, Sersky, with CNN. It's so amazing that he's saying over the past 6 days,
yeah.
The enemy has not advanced even a meter.
I agree with him. Not a meter. He gives you a wrong measurement. It is. Russians didn't advance by a meter, they primarily advanced by kilometers, you know. So, but yeah, in this particular case, he's, you know, strangely correct, you know. So,
and do you think that the way that they're implementing these interviews, they're trying to convince the United States, the public opinion in the United States, because there has to be some sort of outcome for this type of interviews. And why they're doing this? Because we had Zelensky on NBC, if I'm not mistaken. We had Sersky on CNN, all just putting out wrong things about the conflict. And the question would be why they're doing this right now. What are they trying to do?
Well, they are democratic media. Democratic Party. They are run by DNC and they are run by whatever today. I don't remember who is who, like New York Times is FBI or CIA. Oh no, Washington Post, I believe, is CIA and things of this nature. They know that November is coming and they are scared crapless, honestly, with the possibility of Trump getting in, because many of them will end up behind bars. So, and they need to present this picture of the, you know, Biden's, you know, foreign policy success, and they, you know, their propaganda. Krishan Amanpour is not a journalist. First, journalist, there is no such profession as journalism, okay? And so they are prostitutes, basically. And the question is then how much you can brainwash people and constituents. Obviously, you can brainwash some, you know, hoi polloi, pardon for my using this term, you know, who probably doesn't even pay attention and don't know where Ukraine is, you know. So you can kind of present to them this BS, you know, that, oh my God, we're winning. But, of course, they produce, it's delusion, it's projection, it's kind of thing which is completely has nothing to do with, in common with reality. And reality is quite opposite. So, yeah. But they are afraid because, as Mr. Putin today did his massive input when he endorsed Kamala Harris, I mean, they are panicking and they need to do something about it. And so they pretending that something good is happening there while it's quite opposite. And they need to win elections. You know, they need not to allow Trump into the White House. And they will stop at nothing, really. But then again, and you have to keep in mind, most what they can do, they cannot fight real war. They don't understand real economy, especially considering what is happening, you know, right now. But they do PR. They have the whole institutes which are designed to, you know, they study psychology, you know, they study this hoi polloi, as you wish, you know. So, and they, you know, manipulate. So that's the only thing they can do. And as I already stated, there is no real journalism left in mainstream media in the United States. None.
Yeah. And when it comes to the conflict in Ukraine and the battlefield, Andrei, what's going on in this direction, in Pokrov's direction that Sersky was addressing in this interview?
Well, even in CNN, they stated, oh, yeah, though Pokrovsky is under the pressure. Well, it's not about pressure. It's not about captured kilometers. First, Russians are already in Selidova, and there is, of course, Ugledar, practically surrounded. So, and as I already stated, once you finish this thing, and including what is called Neville's Cauldron, they try to escape this Neville's Cauldron. Obviously, you cannot do that without being annihilated. And in Kursk, you can look at videos. It's all over internet of you literally cannot move in the open space, period. You cannot move even in the forest. They're still going to be detected and annihilated. And Kursk is kind of winding down. Russians are mopping it up. And then probably it's going to be advancement on Sumy at some point of time if they will decide. But Sumy and Sumy region, where the reserves have been pulled from the different segments of the front, is being pulverized by Russia. You can see it. It's just. And then, of course, you have now all those situations which are happening all over the front and in deep rear, including Lvov, including, of course, this Poltava thing with when they wiped out all those Swedish, you know, instructors and things of this nature. So it's, they decide. It sounds funny because Russia holds now the Trump card, literally Trump card, which is to American elections, because it's now Russia will decide what they want to do by before November. Do they want to collapse front completely now or slightly later to make sure that those things begin to, you know, basically trickle down into the mainstream media? So, yeah, well, in this case, yeah, you can say that Russia interferes in the U.S. elections by not interfering in them, but doing the, you know, a military thing in the front, which is collapsing. It is collapsing. They are moving beyond the third line, whatever this third line was done there, of those, it's called Ukrep Rayon, which is literally the fortified region. But it's much weaker than, obviously, first two. And Russians breached those two. So after that, it's Dnieper, the whole left, you know, shore of Dnieper River and the fall of the whole Donbass and, you know, other places. And so it's catastrophe for NATO. It's military catastrophe. And, yeah, those bright guys from Pentagon and London, or the Pentagon now tries to wash its hands and say, no, it wasn't us. Well, London, those Lilliputian armed forces and general staff of UK, they planned it. And those French guys, which now are becoming available, that was planned by amateurs who thought that they know how operations work. They don't.
And the Kursk region right now, how many soldiers they have lost? It's more than 7,000.
Nine and a half thousand today killed. So they entered there with 13 brigades. So could have been different estimates because obviously it's very difficult sometimes to identify a thing. And they do the trick, for example. Ukrainians do the trick. It's pure thing. It's the total Pentagon. That's PR. That's pretty much what they're good at. Is they call some kind of what is it, Jaeger 150th, you know, battalion. Okay, the moment this 150th battalion crosses in Kursk, guess what? They change its name to the 82nd. Brigade to show that, oh yeah, we are, you know, immortal. Of course, then they get wiped out. They get another battalion or several battalions. They go in, get wiped out, but they always, so if they try to create the impression that Russians fight the single brigade, 82nd. Of course, it's complete baloney, and this is the kindergarten level PR tricks. But yeah, this from what this morning was 9,500 killed. So those 13 brigades were kind of, you know. So they threw in the, whatever, 500, some kind of whatever's left there on the front. And Russians report, Russian forces report all across the front. We move into some place. There is virtually no resistance anymore. We just go in, well, mop up whatever they try to offer in terms of resistance, take the POWs, and yeah, it's collapse of the front. It's collapsing. You can see it in real time. So,
is the region is isolated right now by Russians?
You mean Kursk?
Kursk region, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You cannot move in there or out. And there is a very remarkable thing. When you have a Deutsche Welle, you know, this propaganda outlet of the BND and, you know, essentially, you know, NATO outlet. Even they suddenly came up with a documentary a couple of days ago about the colossal, they showed the work of the crematoriums. Oh, well, Germans, you know, so, and all those frozen bodies which are being delivered in one of the distribution points in one of the hospitals, I believe in Kharkov, where there are hundreds of bodies just, you know, being frozen until they find relatives or whatever. So, and if not, then they, you know, burn them. And what can I say? It's horrendous. And you look at this, there are containers upon containers of the frozen bodies. It's like, huh, where have they been, you know, in the last 2.5 years? And now suddenly Deutsche Welle, which is the herald of the NATO propaganda, and especially, you know, and they show that because it's horrendous losses. And yeah, we know what is happening in terms of the, they continue to catch people on the street. And basically, they're sentencing them to death.
Yeah. Two things about the interview that Zelensky gave to NBC. One of the points was he was asked if they're going to attack again on the Russian soil. He said that, I'm not going to talk about it. And do you think with the level of desperation, with what's going on right now, are they trying to do it again? Maybe not on the Russian soil, maybe would be on a nuclear power plant, and which is so serious when it comes to the security of these nuclear power plant and the danger that would come out of these type of attacks.
Well, the nearest to them is, of course, Kursk. In Kurchatov, they never reached even close to it. The only thing they can do is not shell even. They don't have range, even in if you want to get into the Kursk Oblast, and I can tell you one thing, it's from Russian forces that they confirmed that said, we never annihilated so many HIMARS and MLRS throughout the whole operation. They brought them in, obviously they want to attack because if you have HIMARS, it can reach from Kursk, it can reach Kurchatov. But you have to understand that on the ground, they can do nothing. They will be annihilated, which is happening right now. And it is really a shame that people continue to repeat Zelensky propaganda that we hold 500 square miles. No, they hold now. And again, it's not holding. Many people do not understand on the tactical level what is happening there. It's a polka dot. Those small pockets which they retain there, and it's all within the area of less than 100 square kilometers. So, and they are being, yeah, pulverized. And as one of the prisoners said, we knew, we knew that we are being thrown to be killed, because everybody knew in their unit that they will be killed. So, and he surrendered together with the unit. And so they can try this. And of course, their new hope is this Jassim, you know. But again, they cannot reach it. They will try again to attack. Make no mistake. And don't forget, many people do not understand that actually, I don't think so, because it was planned by French and British primarily, which means it's kindergarten, you know, they don't understand what they were doing. They thought like, oh yeah, we'll throw first, you know, a couple brigades, you know, and we'll develop, you know, this, you know, find its classic American operational manuals and NATO. We'll find the weak points, break through, you know, and then take the R-200 highway and get, you know, onto the Kurchatov, you know, the take the, it's just, it's like the guys, high school people can, you know, plan better than that. But of course, when they have been contained like no further than 11 kilometers deep into the territory, now it shrunk, and there is, they don't have resources to do anything like this. They still have resources, including their company, I would say, level raid. Between 100 and 200 you know, personnel with some armor. Yeah, they will try raids in Bransk, in, again, Belgorod, again, well, Kursk probably late. And so, yeah, they'll be trying to do that. Absolutely. But again, 13 brigades, most of them obliterated, you know, because we're talking about 9,500 KIAs. How many were wounded and what is the organizationally they have been completely wiped out. And again, Russians do not count what they kill and who they kill in the Sumy region. Unless, of course, you have the complete visual objective control numbers. They are not counted. But if you take a look at what is happening there, it is just, I mean, it's a... As one of the Russian media today, Komsomolska Pravda, stated, it's a porridge there, kasha. It's just absolute disaster there.
Yeah, and the second point would be the situation of the Zelensky administration right now, and with this resignations coming from the foreign minister of... We know that how important he was, the foreign minister of Ukraine. He was so close to Antony Blinken. And here comes the question, what's going on? What's really going on in Ukraine that we don't know? It seems that everything just getting devastated inside the administration. Yeah, it's collapsing.
Rats are leaving the sinking ship. This is the strategy of Russia was, you know, to exhaust them to the point that, and again, don't forget, Russians are not fighting Ukraine. They're fighting NATO, you know. So, and their government in... Zelensky, what's called administration, he is illegitimate president now, together with Verkhovna Rada, which is the parliament. They are all illegitimate. Their terms expired long time ago. And what they're trying to do, obviously, they're to maintain this corpse of this so-called Ukrainian state. But it's not like, you know, he was fired. Obviously, that was kind of mutual thing and resignation. Because, and not only Kuleba, who was one of the main ideologues and perpetrators of this basically insanity, but there are many of them. And these are rats, so, you know, leaving their sinking ship. They stole enough money to have their, you know, how to say it, real estate elsewhere in the West. I'm sure the people, they will end up teaching their diplomacy in Georgetown. That's their level. So some of them will be probably reading lectures in West Point or U.S. Army War College, telling people how they have to fight, you know, how to win the wars. So, and yeah, that's what we have.
Yeah. And Zelensky says in this interview that Russia must be present at the second peace summit. And if we're going to have a second peace summit, and in nobody knows who's going to do that. Is going to be Switzerland, in your opinion? He's thinking, again, Switzerland doing a new summit?
Swiss humiliated themselves already enough. If they want to become a laughing stock of the world, let them. Russia is not coming. And it's like the famous anecdote that, you know, two hunters go and they separate a little bit, and then one hunter screams from some, you know, forest like, "Hey, Ivan, I caught the bear." And he says, "Okay, Sergey, bring him here." Except he doesn't let me, you know. So, and that's the same situation. Why Russia would go there? I mean, it's so stupid. It's all PR. As I already stated, practically the whole management and statesmanship in the West has been reduced to PR. You are looking at those elites across the board. The only thing they can do is to stay elected. That means being reelected. They will promise you anything, you know. They can promise you, you know, horn of plenty. And to do PR, because these are two adjacent things. They do not have any military statesmanship or any kind of skills. We are talking about the death of expertise and professionalism in the West, across the board, from military to diplomacy. And so these people now try to do what they, you know, never even foresaw, because they committed combined West and Biden administration, which was the, well, it's not just Biden. There was obviously Trump played a huge role in arming Ukraine and abrogating a bunch of the treaties and things of this nature. But it was Biden's administration decision based on the fantasy, Chalabi moment, second Chalabi moment, the fantasy. They don't know Russia. They don't understand Russia. They do not know history. They do not understand how real military operate. They don't understand what real war is. So, and they said, okay, let's go. And they did. They wanted to provoke Russia, and they did provoke Russia, but Russians already went there willingly. And there you go. Instead of the collapse of Putin regime, we have Kazan summit of BRICS in October. I mean, it's the worst nightmare. You have to understand this. But again, they didn't read Tolstoy and War and Peace. They cannot read it because they cannot, don't have faculties and don't have emotional strength to understand that they are kindergarten in all this game. And when describing Borodino battle, Lev Tolstoy, Leo Tolstoy, writes about the feeling of Napoleon. When he, you know, is the, when you really have this in during the, he was feeling as he was in the dream. And instead of when he saw the ruffian approaching him, instead of this, you know, deadly blow to the ruffian, his hand suddenly, you know, just all limp and you cannot do nothing. And the, so, and this is exactly what is happening. But then again, those people, they don't read real classic literature. They're very uncultured people. So, and this is exactly the moment they're having. It's panic and desperation. And yes, they thought they will deal this deadly blow to Russia. Guess what? There you go.
Andrei, right now, when you look at the official policy of Kremlin right now, official policy of the Putin administration, do you think if they go after some sort of negotiation, that would be without Ukraine? Is that we can definitely say that Ukraine would not be part of these negotiations?
Ukraine is not subject, it's object. Ukraine is the extension of the United States. And Russians already, how many times they have to go out and say, we're not negotiating with Ukraine. We're talking to United States. That's the point, you know? So Ukraine is a tool. It's a toy, you know, so, and the broken toy, you have to remove it from the, and then talk about, you know, and so again, Russians will talk to Washington. Washington is not ready. So, and, but the more they procrastinate, the worse it will become. That's what I'm saying. Russia is deciding now, when will we do the, you know, this final blow militarily? Tomorrow, or maybe wait until like, last 10 days of October to make sure that we really get the, you know, send the message and it's received. So that's the most likely what is this all about. And I don't even know, again, to talk in Washington with whom? There's nobody there, and that's the point. There is no paper. Anything you make, you know, agreement with the United States is not worth the paper it's written on. How it's going to be arranged, it's not going to be negotiation, or as I already stated, it will be dictating of the articles of the surrender, basically, or unconditional surrender for the combined West. How? We'll see. But again, as I already stated, I'm on the record. I write about this for many years, and it turned out to be correct. Washington doesn't do the strategy. They do not know what strategy is. All those papers were like, oh, yeah, national security strategy. It's all kind of reminiscent of the 24th Communist Party Congress of the Soviet Union with 6 hours report of Leonid Brezhnev, you know, like saying those, you know, platitudes and things like that. And then it's pretty much the same. It's very reminiscent of that. So those pathos-ridden statements, you know, and things like that. A reality is, of course, very drab for the United States. And they should have been talking to Russia earlier, but they have been warned a number of times.
Yeah. If you remember, we talk about the Kursk region and who's the mastermind of it. We talk about maybe London is behind this. And right now we have this article in...
Oh, good gosh. Yeah.
And when you look at this article, you just don't understand what's the point that this guy is making and what he's trying to do. Because this is just... How Andre, if... Does it match the strategy in the Kursk region?
No, the guy is completely delusional. I made the video today about him, and this, I mean, this is, it's not even fantasy. It's, I don't know what kind of drugs he is, very hard drugs, serious ones, you know, the combination of LSD, you know, whatever the methamphetamines, you know, probably shot of heroin to, for good measure. Because to come up with this, you have to be a complete moron. And this is coping. This is butt hurt. They cannot sustain this anymore, especially when you talk about British. Their military is a joke. Their military education is a joke. Academy is Sandhurst is a joke. The same goes to their whatever the passes there for the general staff and planning organizations. They are operating with the force, which easily gets into the not only Wembley, I mean, FC arsenals, you know, whatever, O2 arena, can easily accommodate all British, you know, armed forces, all of them. And so the guy is hurting badly. You can say that and immediately. Plus, again, as I'm on record, unless you're cadre military with a serious background in military affairs, I mean, what you're getting, you get this type of the, I don't even know. It's not even delusion. It's something absolutely new. Yeah, why China doesn't attack Russia? Sure. I mean, makes total sense, doesn't it? So, yeah, I know. It's just ridiculous. So, and here are the guys who are, you know, trying to cope. They try to self-medicate, so to speak. It's self-therapy because they cannot view the reality anymore. You know, they cannot face it. It's, I know it hurts. Make no mistake. I totally understand where they are coming from, but they are amateurs. You know, so they have been exposed as paper tigers. That's what they are. And as I already stated, the only thing they can do is to attack civilians, hide behind the backs of the Ukrainian cannon fodder. That's about the level of their expertise. So you remember this another moron they have in Telegraph? A year ago, he promised that all those Challenger 2 tanks will run over Russian recruits. And, you know, yeah, they're hiding them, whatever is remaining of those Challengers in the rear, because they don't want to be embarrassed anymore. Because if Leopards and Abrams wasn't enough, the last thing they want, one of the Challengers being paraded, the wreck of the Challenger being paraded in Moscow or elsewhere. But this is their level. That, as I already stated, echo chamber does it to you. They are miscalculated strategically. Plus, I'm not sure they do not understand even the, not forget about the theory of operation and theory of operation planning. I don't see, from what I observe, anyone from the Western NATO military. I'm not talking about people like Petraeus or Keane. They wouldn't be allowed to, you know, command battalion in the Russian military. But those people do not understand what operational art is. Art, not theory of operations, not operation planning, which is a hard science, which is a lot of mathematics, you know, all kinds of things. I'm talking about art, what it is, how the operations planned, and how the, especially theater-wide operations planned when they are conducted at the combat and command and control by the general staff. They don't have those things. For example, I make this statement today in my video about the Joint Chiefs of Staff. This is not a general staff. They are harmonizers or whatever the, you know, strategists all those services present to them. Navy, Air Force, Army, they have commands. But the point is, it is a vertical structure which it builds from the bottom up to the political, you know, leadership, and encompasses, including cultural and historical issues for the nation. The United States doesn't have it. First, Oliver Stone yesterday talking to this wonderful, what is the Austrian magazine and the interviewer, you probably know. Oliver Stone comes out and says, America doesn't know what war is. I agree. They never fought a real war. I mean, they fought some expeditionary operations, except for probably the closest thing the United States ever came to defending its landmass was obviously in the during the World War II with the Pacific War. But then again, at that time, Hawaii wasn't even the part of the United States. It was the external territory, and that's it. But when you look at the continental warfare, British don't know what continental warfare is. They, again, all their wars were expeditionary. All imperial wars, essentially, on the secondary theaters of operation. And so that's what happened. And operational art, they never studied history.
Yeah. And when it comes to the situation right now in the European Union, especially in Germany, we have the rise of AfD.
Yeah.
And AfD, Alternative for Deutschland, and the left wing, the four left wing candidates, Sarah Wagenknecht. Yeah, they're against the conflict. They're against this help to Ukraine. They're against this conflict with Russia. They want to have some sort of relationship, in my opinion. And they see a future with Russia. But do you see this happening to Germany in the current situation?
No. First, let's not overestimate the obviously the interesting victory. And it wasn't an overwhelming victory by AfD. They won, definitely. So, and especially coming, yeah, Wagenknecht and her whatever left wing, you know, party. And she is the, charismatic leader. But it generally, they are not very different, actually, from the globalist left, so-called left wings. Not very different. They are the same, you know, cultural suicidal policies and things like that. The only thing is that they change rhetoric towards Russia. Now, AfD, it's a moderately conservative party. It's not far right. It's all garbage by the mainstream media. But it's Thuringia, it's former GDR, which never got properly incorporated at that time into the Germany's, you know, German's prosperity, which much of it was obviously based on robbing other countries, such as, you know, Greece, among many, you know, and destroying, industries, for example, in Poland, you know. So it's just one land out of many in Germany, but they will continue to vote for CDU, whatever, Christian Democrats, and all the fact that they're still going to vote for, you know, those left-wing parties anyway. So, and the problem for them is that by the time they will hit Weimar Republic type dislocation and decomposition, which they are on the way of it. It's not anymore if, it's when it's going to happen. They will hit this Weimar type, Republic type thing. Then we'll see what's gonna emerge from there. But I don't think so. Germany even will recover because it decomposes from the inside. Together with many European nations, it was completely corrupted. It is an occupied country, and it's gonna end up with what we saw in Weimar Republic, a complete economic dislocation. Now that Volkswagen is shutting down its first two plants, it's just, they're losing a metallurgical industry. They almost lost their chemical industry. Let them produce solar panels. What can I say? They voted for it.
Yeah. And the situation in France as well, we know that they want to impeach Macron in France, and does it make any sort of difference when it comes to Ukraine?
No, absolutely not. They are France, Germany, United Kingdom. They are not the subjects of the international politics. They are objects. They are servants for the United States, and they will continue to be servants to the United States. And I, as an American living in the United States, I don't care about them. If my, good living, so to speak, depends on robbing them, so be it. But they are being robbed, and they are being sacrificed at the altar of the insane economic policies, which are neoliberalism and globalist. They are monetarist, and they chose this, so to speak, way. They voted for it. What can I say? I don't care. No, honestly, I mean it. I'm not overplaying it or any way, So in this case, doesn't matter who comes to power in France or in Berlin, nothing is gonna change.
Andre, just to wrap up this session, in your opinion, if a country in the European Union have had the audacity to say no to the United States, that's enough, what country that would be? It would be Germany, France, or other countries?
No.
None in the Western part of Europe?
Yeah, well, no. Nobody will say no. First, look at the elites, for crying out loud. Do you see anybody? Even the scale of Helmut Kohl, okay? Even that scale in Germany. Forget about Helmut Schmidt, or Willy Brandt, who told Americans to pound sand and develop the Ostpolitik. No, they're going to commit suicide. They are committing suicide as we speak, economic, cultural, and all that. So, and as a result, you have a very many Annalena Baerbocks there, okay, and Scholzes. These are primarily types, except they're different in color somewhat. One may come up and say, I'm so tough. They are not. They are cowards, they are blackmailed, they are compromised, they are, some of them probably on payroll of some secret services. So, good luck. No, nobody will do anything about it. They are cowards. They sold their nations, and those nations helped them to be sold. So there you go.
Because the way that they're going right now, Andre, it's unbelievable. They can just, Germany is so important, and nobody seems to understand the importance of Germany for the European Union and the way they're losing right now, their economy. And
well, I mean, they, again, listen, you have to understand, I had enough, sympathy to those people for many years. But, I mean, they continue to vote for globalists, and they are American stooges, period. United States can dispose of them anytime it wants to, And the whole idea was, that is why the whole change in those postures and strategies or nuclear strategies is because, again, Washington is one-trick ponies, highly uncultured people, highly uneducated. They think that, let's repeat, the World War II. Let Europeans fight between each other. We sit out behind the ocean. Dudes, it's 2024. Single Barrier class missile submarine can launch from naval base without leaving, okay? And that will be it. So they don't even understand that, because you have this all, cabal of humanities dumb down people with the political science, history, whatever, what have you, you know. So international relations, who are being, they are not educated. They are primarily indoctrinated. This is what I am saying when Harvard, you know, or Yale, these are degree mills for these people. People don't understand that. They produce basically, you know, fraud, academic and statesmanship fraud. The statesman producing machine in the West is utterly broken. And as a result, we have people like Scholz, we have Annalena Baerbock, we have Macron, and we have all kinds of the weirdos. You look at what is happening in Great Britain, United Kingdom. It's a parade of the nincompoops, basically. Liz Truss, Boris Johnson, and those, you know, it's just like, yeah, you voted for it. You wanted it. It's just good luck, you know. So if you do not have the, you know, even instinct of self-preservation, but again, Germany is done. It's, and same goes to France, despite the fact that they try to buy, now try to find circumvent, circumnavigate all those sanctions and try to buy Russian energy. Too late. They are non-competitive energy-wise and without energy. So, and Turkey now applied to BRICS and like, okay, so.
That's, yeah. Thank you so much, Andrei, for being with us today. Great pleasure as always.
My pleasure. Okay.